Call to order our TAC meeting on December 15th, 2022. We do have an agenda, which I have up. I have a million things up, so you're going to bear with me as I get to it. As always, stop, ask questions. This is a free form. We're all here just to share information. This isn't a technical or strict meeting format. So if you have something to add or would like to discuss something, please just shout out at any time. I believe we all know each other. Mike, were you at? I'm just going to embarrass Mike and ask him to turn his camera on and we'll kind of go through. Mike is a new senior engineer here with us at Wes, who may be the newest member to the team. These are actually, okay, we'll go around. We'll go around and introduce ourselves so everybody knows where Mike is and Mike knows who's here. Stephen, can you introduce yourself to your brother?
Mike. Mike and I are counterparts at the county, both professionally and I guess as siblings. So,
Jeff?
Jeff Stallard, I'm the new capital program manager for Wes upon Lynn's retirement, and that started in October, so a few months on the job.
Jen?
Jennifer Garbley, City of Milwaukee, and I'm the assistant city engineer.
Jen, do you mind, is Jennifer better? I'm sorry, because people do that, Jess and Jessica, I don't want to.
No, I'm fine with Jen.
Okay, thank you, sorry.
Dana? Dana Webb, City of Oregon City, City Engineer.
Kyle?
Kyle Bean, West Field Operation Supervisor.
Zach?
Zach Goldmeyer, Project Inspection and Coordination for West.
Marina?
Hi, I'm Marina Ascension. I'm an associate engineer at the City of West Lynn.
Mike?
Mike Rice, new engineer with Capital Group at West.
Nathan?
Nathan Seaver, project management with Capital Group at West.
And Akiko, if you don't mind, we'll get you in there too. You're muted.
Sorry about that. Akiko Gates and me at West.
Well, thank you, everyone. So the first thing we've got on the agenda is to review and approve the September minutes. And if I do this correctly, share screen. Let's see, screen two, but I believe that's the agenda. Share. But if I do that. Minutes. Aha. I don't know if y'all had a chance to read through or not. I did notice that up at the top, we need to change it from agenda to minutes. This will be the minutes for the September 15th meeting. And if anybody had any comments or changes they would like to be seen made to the minutes, please mention it. And if not, if we're comfortable, if someone could motion to approve.
I'll motion to approve, Dana.
Thank you. And a second, anyone?
No second.
Thank you, Nathan.
Nathan.
Great. Okay. And I will stop that share. Go back to my agenda. Well, that was easy. Good. Okay. One thing off the list. Hey, Chris Randall's here. Hi, Chris.
If you Hi, don't, everybody. Sorry I was late.
Yeah, no worries.
Can you conflicting meetings today, lots of them, and I'm going to be in meetings all afternoon, so fun stuff, but thank you for noticing, and I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Do you mind, Chris, just introduce yourself real quick, and then we'll have our newest employee, Mike, introduce himself to you.
Yeah, absolutely no issues there at all. So, yeah, I'm Chris Randall, the Public Works Director, City of Happy Valley. Obviously, a district a district, well, Happy Valley is driven by a district model where Water Environment Services manages our surface water and stormwater utility for us. Kyle Bean and I have a great relationship. Jessica and I have a great relationship. Most of the Jeff and I have a great relationship. We all talk a lot about all the activities that happen within our community. So I don't want to add a lot. I'm not a community that's asking for a grant for this or that specifically, but we're here as a team for sure. And I'm here to listen and learn and help navigate the situations that may come up.
All right. And Mike?
Nice to meet you, Chris. I'm Mike, a new engineer with Capital Group.
Great. So yeah, we work a lot with Chris and his folks, and you know, still they do traffic and roads and all that, so permitting, and so a lot of coordination between us, even though we do the maintenance and operations and maintenance of the sewer and storm out there in Happy Valley. So great. Next thing on the agenda, we were the DEQ Inflow and Infiltration Reduction Annual Report. This is something that Kyle luckily gets to submit every year to DEQ. And we went over it a little in September. I had shared with you all the information that we're looking for, and I can share with you again. Ooh, almost hit the leave button. That would have been good. Here we go. So we're going to be politely pestering every member community that owns and operates their own sanitary sewer collection system for information on your system. And this, hopefully you can see this Word document, is the data that we would be looking for on an annual basis. We're hoping to get it from you by January 15th because we have a hard deadline of February 1st that we have to submit to DEQ. Kyle, do you have anything you want to add to this or the ask?
No, you know, some of the things that are, you know, that we push a lot for to try to get our numbers on here, the cleaning and inspecting, and then Jessica helps us out a lot with the amount of main lines we're repairing and the manholes that are getting repaired. So it's an interesting report, and I'm excited to see kind of how it's going to change as we collect all this more information from the other communities.
Yeah, it's always been, you know, skewed. Wes would report on our own owned and operated pipes, and specifically in the Tri-City area, we don't own and operate much of that collection system. You know, we may have 5% of the pipes that go to that facility, whereas Westland, Gladstone, and Oregon City, all of your flow goes to that facility and through those collection systems. So it always looks skewed with the total volume of flow treated at the plant, but yet the miles of sewer tributary to it was wrong. So this will be a polite ask. I will pester you again. I will send this form. I believe I mailed it out to you last week with the agenda and such, but I will reach out again beginning of January with the form attached and see if hopefully you'll be able to pull together some numbers for us. It is reported in miles, so you know, rounding is, but we just want to get a little closer to accurate on what's tributary to the plants and what type of upstream maintenance is going on, because we know you're all taking care of and maintaining your systems. So much more to report on that. Anyone have any questions or comments on this? Okay. I'm going to head back to my agenda here. Permanent flow metering assistance. Oh, this is a fun one. As you all know, WES has a permanent flow metering network. We use Hawk flow meters. We have approximately 30 out there in the collection system, mainly on interceptors, you know, on the big pipes, not smaller tributary areas and such. But we use them just to keep, you know, keep the tabs on what the sewer system's doing, what our typical diurnal flows are, what our summer flows are, what our winter flows are. We also use them to track the INI reduction and influence in the sewer system. And we are interested in Oregon City. Dana and Kenny over at Oregon City reached out about they may be doing their own permanent flow metering and what were the possibilities that West could, since we already do it, add meters and help support Oregon City, which is something that we're definitely interested in doing. But I all wanted to see if maybe Milwaukee or West Lynn had ever thought of those kind of things, and that would be a service we could provide to every member community. Now, with all that being said, this isn't going to move fast. I'm not going to be able to get meters in data for you for this spring. This would require Wes beefing up our staff who maintain our meters, beefing up our inventory of meters and all that. And it would be we'd have to figure out a realistic cost. We would be looking for reimbursement from, I believe, we would be looking for reimbursement from the member communities for the service. But that is also kind of left to be established. So just wanted to throw that out there. Jen, do you think there's any possibility?
Yeah, I would say we'd be interested. We don't have a whole lot of meters, and that's where I'm kind of leaning for. I would like a few more meters within our system. As yep. soon as we get Waverly Heights kind of moving forward and kicking off, I'm hoping, I mean, that's going to be probably like a 2-3 year project. Mm-hmm. Then we would want to do a whole new evaluation of the system and see where, you know, again, and get some smaller pockets of where else do we need to start focusing on and things like that.
Yep. Great. Oh, cool. Yeah. Marina, do you know, is Westland, I know you guys do temporary meters for your modeling and stuff.
Yeah, I don't have a concrete response. I know that this year our main focus is upgrading a lot of our pump stations, whether that's rebuilding out of the floodplain or just updating instrumentation and controls. So I think it's the appropriate time for us to consider this.
Okay.
But ultimately something I'd have to bring up with Eric and our operations crew too.
Right. Yeah, no, something I just wanted to see, you know, what kind of interest there is out there, whether we take it in-house and provide the service to everybody or as a group, if we're going to be, you know, hiring like an ADS or somebody like that to meter. Maybe it's a collective thing where we have a few meters in each member community, but at least doing it as a group. So there's a little bit of a benefit mm-hmm. and coordination to that. So, all right, we will keep talking on Wes's, you know, leadership team and see, you know, the other portion of that would be, you know, what level of service, you know, we use the Hawk meters that report via cellular to the cloud. Everybody would be able to access their own meters and the data. We do not do stringent QAQC or analysis on the meter data. We just kind of look at it and say, yep, that looks right. Or, oh, that battery level's low, or that velocity seems to be falling out. And, you know, we go and maintain the meter, but we don't, we'd have to see. It's not really analysis of the data, more just collection of the data. So, okay, cool. So I will continue to work on that, and it will be a topic on meetings to continue going forward, and hopefully we can do that as a group. Great. So next thing on the agenda was the regional II funding request projections. Oh, one thing to celebrate, and I don't know if everybody knows. Everybody signed the IGA. Westland, thank you, Marina and Eric, for getting that done. We are all now, everyone has signed. We are all on the same IGA, and therefore everybody is eligible for funding, cost sharing with Wes on II-related rehab projects. So part of that IGA is that it asks for annually so that we can budget appropriately and have the money put aside to support you in your projects, is that you submit to us a funding request projection. This can be round numbers. It's just a budgeting tool. What you think you will have over the next 3 to 5 years of projects, approximate cost that you will be reaching out and possibly proposing are requesting funding for. This in no way, this isn't a all-inclusive list. If something comes up that wasn't on the list, it's not that it won't, that it will be denied. Also, you know, if you have something on the list, but it doesn't go forward because it gets trumped by another project, again, not a big deal. This is just so that West can keep a steady kind of projection and put money aside in our CIP annually to support your efforts. So what I was envisioning is literally, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years, depending on how far out you do your own CIP planning, you know, project title and estimated cost per fiscal year. That way, and I may have some follow-up questions and stuff when we work with finance, but that'll be very helpful to them so they don't get shocked with the bill at the end of the year. So,
when's this due, Jessica?
This is February 1st.
Perfect.
So, and again, I'll send out a reminder email prior to and kind of pester everybody, polite reminder to please put together and send to us by February 1st projections. Any questions or anything on that? Okay. And then I believe, Chris, I think you may have mentioned wanting to an update on the Tri-City outfall project at some point. I don't know. I may be dreaming things, but I thought you said that at some point.
No, Jessica, we just talked about regional items in general.
Okay. And
anytime you have an update on just kind of a regional thing that we're doing or a big project that Wes is involved in, I know that Jeff and his team is working diligently right now on a whole bunch of capacity increasing and improving projects and on the collection side. And so anything that just comes up, it's just interesting to note. I like, you know, knowledge is power. Understanding kind of how the system works as a whole is cool. I've been involved on the technical advisory team here and then on the advisory committee at the higher level too. So I kind of have the whole picture, but many people don't. So it's just kind of neat to see how the system is and how interconnected it really is when you look at it. It 100% what one community may do that they think, oh, it doesn't really impact anybody, impacts a lot of us. So it's yep. it's just the big picture look. And so if you have something, great. If not, don't make it an issue for the team to put something together. That's not what I'm asking. I'm just saying, if you got something to note, cool to hear about.
No, definitely. No, I appreciate it. And I appreciate your holistic look and understanding that, yeah, no, one of us does something, it does impact others. So we do. Jeff is leading the Tri-City Water Resource Recovery Facility outfall project. And he has some information put together to share with us.
Sure. And I am reusing a presentation I gave to the advisory committee here a few weeks ago. I added a little bit more information, and it's not super technical in nature because of the audience, but if there's technical questions you guys want to have a discussion on in this group, feel free to ask. My spiel will be slightly different and slightly more targeted for our advisory group here or technical group here. But I did also want to mention that, I didn't do this to start with, but our five-year CIP, so Wes's five-year CIP was approved last week by the board. And so that's exciting for us as an organization and also for what we can plan for in the next 5 years. It's a five-year CIP, but really from a financial standpoint, we were looking out at 12 years. And that was really about rate balancing and leveling and kind of identifying moving the pieces of projects we have around to normalize those costs and expenditures and tie that into the rate model. So that will be out on our webpage. There's one administrative thing we're working on to finalize that report. It's just a name on somebody on a title. And so we'll get that resolved, and that should be posted out to our webpage at WES here next week, early next week. That'll be published. And so if anybody wants a copy specifically, they can download it. If you want to reach out, we could also provide a copy. If you just reach out to myself or Jessica, we can make sure to get you a copy of that. But that'll kind of shows our financials and what we're looking for the next 5 years in terms of projects. All right. So some of this, I know Dana, I believe you were at the OCBA. So some of this will be, you're going to listen again. So I apologize for that. There's some of the same information in here, but others, maybe this will all be new. Everybody see that?
No, I can't see it, Jeff.
All right, how about now?
Gotcha.
All right, perfect. Let me get my notes up here for me. Perfect. Just to start off, talk about the project driver. Our facility was built in the mid-80s, so 1984, our outfall was put in at the same time as another interceptor, the interceptor pipe that brings flows from the west side was brought into our plant. The outfall was built at the same time. So it's an interesting, they almost stacked the pipes. They're right side by side. They were built in the same trench. But it's nearing its capacity. That was identified during the collection system master plan or the sanitary sewer master plan, depending on how you want to title it, which was completed in 2019. And that master plan identified that our Tri-City facility at build out, so we're looking out at to 2080 approximately for the full build out of the plant, would need to have 162 million gallon wet weather capacity to meet the build out conditions. And everybody's seen this slide, but I just want to kind of remind this group, we are all working for INI. These are the basins that were identified. Our outfall and all of our sizing, quite frankly, on all of the infrastructure that we're planning for assumes that we all work together to address our INI. So if we did not address the INI, just a reminder, you know, at 2080, this gray line here, we could expect to need about 400 million gallons of capacity at our treatment plant. If we do work on our INI together, then we can knock that down to a peak wet weather in the 160 million gallons range. And so you can see that INI reduction is not only important for right-sizing our pipelines, but also for right-sizing our plant and the facility that ultimately has to convey and treat all of that water. So that's no news to everybody here, but I just want to remind everybody it's an important thing that we're all embarking on and we're working towards. And if we aren't successful, obviously that'll change our plans for what we have to build and our rate modeling and everything else. So I appreciate everybody working on that. So in 2019, we kicked this project off after the collection system master plan identified it. And kind of the first thing you do for an outfall project is, where are we going with the pipeline? And so this group may be aware, but we're not able to permit an outfall to the Clackamas River. That's not an option any longer. And so we have to go out to the Willamette. And so we did some bathymetric surveying. Along the river, we did river bottom sampling. And so we were really looking for the best spot in the Willamette River in this stretch, kind of between the Abernathy Bridge and the confluence with the Clackamas, on where we should have our outfall. Really what you're looking for that, for a suitable spot or a preferred location, is you want to find as deep a spot as possible, because the deeper you are, the more time your effluent has to mix with the river water. And you want to find a place in the river that has a very stable river bottom. I know the Columbia Boulevard plant, for instance, out in the Columbia, it's a really sandy bottom, and they're always having to deal with their diffusers getting buried. So that's not really, if you can avoid that, that's a preferred to avoid that. And so what we really looked for was a nice stable spot in the river. And to analyze that, we looked at historical bathymetric surveys, looked at the bathymetric survey that we did, and compared those to find the stable spot. So the target there was one of the first things we found was, where do we need to take this pipe to? And this green line here, as shown, that is the route of our existing outfall that currently goes out. And it's a 72-inch pipe that turns into an 84-inch pipe. and has three pipes that go out into the river. It is a pretty shallow spot in the river, quite frankly. It's not the best spot for an outfall. The new spot we've identified is we'll have our outfall, I believe, about 8 feet deeper into the water. It's a much deeper spot in the river, which gives us much better mixing and is overall better for the health of the river. I'd like to note, we are going to keep our existing outfall to meet the peak wet weather of 160. That's a combination of this outfall and the existing outfall, the new one and the existing. Because this is such a better spot in the river, this will end up being our primary outfall, and our existing outfall will turn into a wet weather outfall, essentially. When peak flows hit it, we'll be able to overflow water to, effluent to that to go out to the river. Based on the hydraulic modeling, we're looking at probably 2040 before we would see flows that would need to be to use our old outfall. So we'd be good with our new outfall all the way through approximately 2040. And then even then, it would only be once or twice a year for a long period of time. And through build out, it's really not that regularly that we'll have to send flows to the existing outfall, but we need to have that capacity to send it when it's necessary. So after a routing study where we looked at all number of ways to get from our treatment plant down to the river, as you can imagine, the most direct route was the most cost effective. But in addition to that, it also gave us the least environmental impacts, as it was rated and was the cheapest. And so our alignment there in the green parallels I-205 pretty much from our plant all the way down to the diffusers. The pipeline's currently estimated to be 7.5 feet in diameter, so a very large diameter pipe. And the capacity of both of the outfalls, as I mentioned, will exceed the 162. I think just based on standard pipe sizes, I think it roughly gives us 175 MGD. But if we go with a smaller pipe, we don't quite hit the peak that we need. So we played with, just for the group's sake, we played with a number of different pipe types, whether we went with concrete pipe or fiber reinforced FRP pipe. It really made, for this size pipe, it made a pretty big difference in hydraulic capacity, which there was a sensitivity there where we landed on an FRP or a smooth wall pipe with this pipe size. And as we're all aware, living in the region, ODOT is under construction on the 205 project. You can see our project is very close to ODOT's project. And so we started working with ODOT back in 2019 during our routing study, and have been coordinating with them along the way here. Where we're landing is, I don't believe it's going to be an issue. We're not going to have to wait for them to finish their project before we get our project going. We're going to be able to occupy the river at the same time. And we are coordinating with them on kind of their sequence and our sequence to try to find the right time. Jen, did you have a question?
You have a contractor now on board. You're going progressive design build on this, right?
We do, yep. Oh, that's on the slide coming up. We do, Michaels, and I'll get to that here in just a minute, if that's all right.
Yep.
So when we talk about having diffusers out in the river, just to paint the picture of what that looks like, the pipeline itself is buried under the river, and the mixing study identified that we would have 18 diffuser ports that stick up off this pipeline. So we'll have this 90-inch diameter pipe that'll go out into the river. It'll be buried. And what sticks up is really these tide flex valves. That's really what sticks up. And I think of these tide flex valves in my mind as a underwater sprinkler, so to speak. It creates a spray into the river so that it gives good mixing to diffuse to disperse the effluent and get good mixing. And so those tide flex valves, they're the consistency of like a tire, if you've not seen one before, and they're breakaway. And so the goal is, if a boat were to anchor up or get caught on it or something, the valve itself would break away from the pipe without damaging the pipe. It's chained to the riser. And you know, you would go back down in at some point once you knew about it and get that fixed. But it shouldn't cause damage to the pipe. I think that's it for that slide. And so what we found in our geotechnical evaluation was the geology of the area poses some problems, poses some challenges. There's three distinct layers of geology down there, and each of them will react differently to tunneling. And since we're going right underneath the 99 interchanges to I-205 and across 99 itself, we're going to tunnel about half of this pipeline. So it's about a mile long total. Half will be open cut and half will be tunneled. And so once we landed on the complex nature of the geology and that we were going to do tunneling and it was not inside our fences where we can kind of have a little bit more control of what's going on, but outside our fence and the public right of way, also adjacent to the 205 project, we really felt like we needed to bring a contractor on board. And so we went to the board in 2020 and got approval to deliver the project progressively, and using a progressive design build model. And so we had to put together all the contract documents. And so it took us about a year to work through getting our documents to a place where we could go out and find a contractor. So it's not a delivery method that the county has used regularly. And so in a progressive design build, for those of you not familiar, you hire the contractor and the engineer. And so we have one contract with Michaels. They're the design build firm. They have a team that they brought to us, which is AECOM as the design engineers and Michaels as the contractor. And so we got them on board in September and had all of our kickoff meetings and everything in September. And in next week, I expect to get our 30% design from them. And so we were able to accelerate the schedule because we had the contractor on board and could really work through some of these. And so this slide really depicts just a section of the profile there, but the green material there is kind of the fill material. The yellow material is a real sandy material. The dark gray material here is a zone that's kind of sandy with cobbles, with some silty sand with cobbles. This is sandy silt. I'm not a geotech, but there's a difference there. And then in the bottom here, you get down into some of the Troutdale, some of the really hard formations. And so tunneling poses problems sand poses problems for tunnel because it always wants to cave in on you, rapidly. So there's some concerns there. Cobbles obviously pose some problems because you don't know how big a cobbles you're going to hit. And, while we do have a big machine, which will handle a lot of cobbles that we would typically see, it still creates a lot more friction. And so our conceptual design had us staying up within this yellow layer that we had put together before we got Michaels on board. And so we've really spent the last 3 months on a lot of workshops and a lot of talking about risk, cost, and what that looks like. We did our conceptual report had a straight tunneling with a receiving pit in the interchange at 99. Michaels has come through and proposed a curved tunnel so we can launch by Main Street and go all the way out to the river. And so this is, sorry, that's a little bit grainy now that I look at it, but this is kind of the route that we've developed with Michaels as part of this 30%. And so this area here all the way to this purple dot there, this upstream will be open cut. And then we will launch our tunneling machine from this purple dot and we will tunnel. We'll start off and we'll do a horizontal curve. And then we're evaluating currently, and I'll show on the next slide, kind of two options of going into the river. And this is the benefit of the design build, is having the contractor that's going to do the work really weigh in on what those risks of the different layers, what's the risk of doing a vertical curve right after a horizontal curve, what's the machine capabilities. I'm learning personally a ton about tunneling and all of the different options. If you think about, you know, all the different models of F-150 they make with all different trims and different levels, and a tunneling machine is exactly the same. They can tool these things completely different, so the heads are all different around what you're going to be going through. So it's been for me, who likes to learn about new things, it's been pretty fascinating to kind of learn about all the different options of tunneling. And the tunneling machine they're projecting right now is going to be 110 inches, so almost 10 foot in diameter, is the tunnel that we're going to be building from basically our roundabout there all the way right out into the river. So as I mentioned, this progressive design build, we're really looking at different options. And so you can see these are just some of the graphics we've used at workshops to talk through what those risks are, where we could stay, you know, is it within the water tables? Could we expect to be submerged or not? Because that impacts the tunneling machine. And so we're really evaluating it, kind of where we're at. We've kind of landed on the horizontal curve where we need to be in the river. And so it's really about how do we get out to the river? And these two differences here, you can see one comes out to the edge of the river, basically to the river bank, and then we would open cut everything from there out into the river. And then this one does that. And then on the right side, I apologize, we're going to dive down here. At the very end, we're going to dive down and actually recover our tunneling machine out in the river. And so we'll tunnel right out to the bottom. We'll dig our machine out from above and basically bring that machine, that huge tunneling machine, onto a barge in the river. And we would tie our diffuser pipes on basically from there out would be built. And so it's obviously less impactful to the park. But you do have to transition between these two zones, which adds some complexity from a tunneling and some risk. And so these are all the kinds of things that we wanted to bring the contractor on board for progressive design build. We're working through risk analysis right now and costs of finalizing that. As I mentioned, that should come in with the 30% design, which is due next week. And then we'll have a pretty clear path for how we're going to get out into the river. And that's really one of the biggest outstanding issues on, you know, being able to move our design forward and finalize that approach. Permitting is huge on this project. It's got federal permits. It's got all the Army Corps of Engineers and everything. And this was a slide that was put together just to talk about the complexity even of just working through the archaeological approval on this through the State Historic Preservation Office and kind of how it ties into the Army Corps of Engineers, which is kind of the joint permit application. This has also been a learning process for me on these kind of more complex federal permits. But I think the message that I wanted to say is, at least for us at WES, and what we always try to do is really get out in front of these kinds of issues and work with permit agencies and stakeholders well in advance of even when things go in. We had a goal of meeting with the Grand Ronde tribe. There's some archaeological finds in the area where we're going to be going through. And so we wanted to make sure that we had understood what their concerns were and other things, even before we got into putting our permits in. So they were aware and hope to streamline that process. And so, you know, as you can see, we started these kinds of conversations in 19 in October. And then we did site walks through COVID and other things with folks to really gather all that. And at this time, we've got our biological opinion back from NMFS, and we've done our public review period through the JPA. And so we're working well. Permitting's not going to cause us an issue around building the project that we found. There's been no real huge red flags or real issues around that. And so we did get our responses back from SHPO at the end of last month. And so they did confirm that we're going to need if we do the open cut on the slope of the river, that we would need to have an archaeologist on site during all of that excavation. And we would be taking samples and looking for finds. And so as I mentioned, we're talking through some of the risks and costs, and, you know, there's a risk that if there's a find, maybe our job gets shut down for a period of time. If you've got all this equipment on site, obviously there's a cost there, versus if you go all the way out to the river, probably you're going to be in native material that's not going to have much of a find. And that requirement for having an archaeologist on site and doing all the sampling might go away. But so you're trading risks and trying to understand, quantify those costs. And that's really where we're at right now with the contractors, working through a lot of those discussions and conversations. So it's been really good. We have Jacobs as our owner's advisor, and so they're still on board. They did all the routing study and everything, and so they're still on board reviewing some of the documents that we get from Michaels and AECOM, helping us identify, are they running the right calculations for settlement, or are we going to be surprised? You know, what we don't want to have is we build this tunnel under 99, and then all of a sudden we were expecting 1 inch of settlement, and now it's 6 inches of settlement. We have a real issue on our hands, and so some of those types of things, just to make sure we're having that. And then just a quick project timeline. You know, we will continue to do public outreach all throughout this process. Our permitting applications went in the first quarter of this year, and that's why we're starting to get some of those responses. I don't think we'll have our permits back in hand for probably another year to get all the I's dotted and T's crossed and make sure that we have them in hand to build. We'll continue our design through 2023, and we will start construction in 2024 is what it's currently looking like. That seems to line up well with what ODOT has going on in the river in the in-water work period in 2024. And so our goal would be to be in the water next in 2024, July through October, in the water building that parts and bring it online in 2025, depending on the sequence of when things are getting built. Some of the things we're also working through beyond the risk is just talking through when do we purchase the pipe, you know, since we have the contractor on board and supply chain and long lead and other thing, you know, when do we order this tunneling machine? Can we find one that we can rent? Do we have to buy one? And so all of those kinds of conversations are occurring as we develop the schedule. But I would say with pretty strong certainty, we'll be in the water in 2024 and have our project complete in 2025, which will meet our capital plan timeframe as well. Any questions? Oh, no, it was a lot. I tried to go relatively quick, but yeah, that's the project. It's going to be real exciting when we get under construction. You know, I've already talked to Michaels about, you know, there's going to be some groups that want to come see it because it's pretty unique. I mean, it's not every day you tunnel a 80-inch diameter pipe with a 10-foot tunnel, and I've got curious people in my organization, and so I would offer up once we get under construction and get going and get things established that we could do a TAT field trip if we wanted to get out and take a look and get close to it and see it. I think it's just a good opportunity. And like I said, I'm by no means a tunneling expert, but I'm trying to learn a lot. And it's a pretty exciting project for me personally and for Wes and the region as a whole, I think.
Jeff, that's cool stuff. Like you said, I'm excited to see it come together. And I think a TAT update or a meeting there would be great to check it out while it's under construction to some degree. That just sounds exciting. Kyle will be looking at it every day, but we don't get to check it out as frequently as him. So I'm teasing him. I don't know whether he will or not. One question I have. So you say, Mike, you're going to have to buy a boring head to do the boring. That's not something Michaels has or can get a hold of or as a contractor?
Yeah, so sometimes it is about timing of what else is going on out there. Sometimes it's about building the right machine for your environment. And so a lot of times the tools themselves, the cutting head on the front, and so they will inject out in front. So they will always want to keep some lubrication so that when you're tunneling right, you can continue to slide through. And so the tool itself, once the project over, the actual cutting head is kind of it's a disposable or a consumable, so to speak. And so, but the machine itself, it comes down to size and availability of what's out there. And so we're looking at the market of, could we buy a refurbished one? Do we need to buy a brand new one? And so they come in all different sizes. And so no, Michaels, while they do have some tunneling machines, they don't have specifically this size, you know, on the shelf sitting there. And so it's that'll be an interesting one, right? Because I've asked the question of, okay, well, if we buy a tunneling machine for this project, then I'm assuming that then that comes to Wes since I paid for it. And so, you know, what does that look like? That'll all figure into some of the negotiations on, you know, the guaranteed maximum price. And so for a design build, basically what we will do, we'll advance our plans to 60%, make sure that all our permits and everything are addressed, any kind of issues around that, and then we'll negotiate a maximum price with Michaels to do the work. They will self-perform the tunneling because that's what we hired, you know, that's the part that we wanted them to do. But all other features, all the in-water piece, all the open cut stuff, that'll all be open bid. So we'll solicit bids from local contractors and get pricing. And so as we work through the GMP, it's a completely open book process. And so we can see all of their costs, all their quotes, all of that stuff so that we can really dive in and negotiate with them on kind of what that's going to end up costing. And so part of that, do we have to buy or could we buy a refurb? Do we have to buy a new? Do we have someone we can rent a machine from? All of that stuff will figure into that final cost and what happens to it. But yeah, it's a because they're all unique in size, it's you, a lot of times you're buying specifically for your project.
Got it. Thank you, Jeff, for that update. Looks like Ron said we just buy them from eBay and we're good. So there's a bunch, of them out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're down in the more standard pipe sizes, you know, they have them in house, but this is not that.
I meant we'd sell it on eBay.
Okay, I got you. Can't buy them there, but might be able to sell it when we're done with it. I got it.
Yeah. Cool.
And, you know, it's just from a dollars and cents standpoint, this is about a $50 million investment in our infrastructure. And so it's not a, it's a pretty, it's the biggest project we have in our capital plan, short of our wet weather expansion that doesn't come until in basically 5 years from now. But it's a sizable investment. And one of the things that I found interesting is when I look at the burn, you know, whenever we get into construction, we look at, okay, how fast are we going to burn this money? And, you know, our solids project was $35 million over 3 years. And so about $1 million a month. This one is like the tunneling piece is about half the cost and it could be 4 months of time. And so you could be spending $20 million in a real short matter of time. And so it's kind of interesting when some of those numbers become not surprising because it is what it is, but they're large in scale in terms of what some of those costs will be as they come in and how that'll be paid for. And so it's a lot of money for a very short period of time, that's for sure.
You have to tell me what that boils down to per minute, Jeff. That's kind of what I'm curious about. But yeah,
well, and that
these big capital projects take a lot, and we're planning for them, and we plan for them a long time before we get to the now. So
yep. It's
not a shock to us that we have to do this work.
That's right. And to your point, right, I mean, Wes has embarked over the last 5 years on finishing up collection system master plans, Willamette facility plan, boring facility plan. So we do have a strong plans in place right now. And that is what is allowing us to say, all right, over the next 10 years, we're going to need to raise rates, but they're going to be 5%. So we're going to be proposing 5% rate increases so that we can fund this work that needs to be done. We're not going to hit these huge marks with significance. So that's what we're seeing, and that's what our planning has let us do. So happy to answer any other questions if you think of them after the fact or want to dive more into some details, feel free to reach out. I'm excited and always interested in talking about this project. It's one, like I said, personally and professionally, I'm pretty excited to be leading it.
Hey Jeff, I just want to mention real quick too for the group. From a regulatory standpoint for our Tri-City facility, we are going through a permit renewal right now, and our permit will be issued next year sometime. It'll be issued in advance of the construction of the outfall, which has a significant impact on our permit and our permit limits. And so we're currently working with DEQ. They're aware of this project, and we're developing the permit in a way so that we can transition from one outfall to the other one during the permit. It'd be a little tricky, and there might be more on that to come in the future, but certainly something worth noting how the outfall factors into our permit aside from our capacity. So more to come on that.
Yep. As I mentioned, it's in a better spot in the river, provides us better mixing and better mixing than what our current outfall does. And so it's a step in the right direction to making it better for the Willamette River, which is why I think we have been pretty successful in all of our correspondence with folks around this particular project and getting it built. It'll be overall more beneficial for the river over the long haul.
I just keep remembering what Alan said about the amount of debris down there being more than what they expected. Are we close enough to them? They kind of cleared what we're going to need to?
Yeah, so we are several hundred feet downstream of them. And so a lot of the things they're running into is leftover formwork and other things like that were left from when they built the bridge originally. And so they did end up hauling away a huge amount of logs down there as well. Our drilling where we drilled, we've got one spot in the river we drilled down. We've got one on the riverbank. We're going to add a couple more drills through our right specifically on our corridor does not show that, but you don't know until you're there, right? And so that's something that we're learning about from them as well and keeping tabs. And so, you know, I mentioned we're coordinating with ODOT. We have a monthly meeting with ODOT, our design team, and contractor and their contractor and their team to just make sure that when we get down there and start building, we're really well coordinated and there should be no surprises. And so just trying to work through what that might mean for boaters in the area, because we really only need to be in the river for that one in water work window, and they're going to be in there for four. And so just making sure we can get in there and shoehorn ourselves for that short period of time will be big. And I know Dana and I had talked to John, and so we're getting ready to kick off some land use pre-app meetings and such. And there's obviously this project will impact Oregon City from that standpoint the most. And so we had started in 2019. We got a ballot measure approved in 2020 to build across John Storm Park. So yeah, we'll continue to have close correspondence with Oregon City, both planning and engineering staff, as it advances.
Great. Anybody questions for Jeff, or open it up to roundtable if anybody has questions, comments, suggestions, anything they want to discuss as a group? Okay. Well, seeing none, I will thank you all for coming. Everybody have a wonderful holiday. We will meet again in March, and I will be sure to send out reminder emails and the information we're requesting for both the INI annual report and the INI funding request, so that everybody has that. Okay. And I will call this meeting to a close, and thank you, everyone. Happy holidays. We'll see you in 2023.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.